You know the line from the Robert Frost poem, "Some say the world will end in fire, some in ice"? Frost, of course, wasn't writing about climate change, but British journalist John Lanchester's recent novel, The Wall, paints a decidedly chilly picture of climate catastrophe. It begins in the future, when rising sea levels and an immigration crisis pit children against parents. Steve Paulson loved it.
It's cold on the wall. That's the first thing everybody tells you, and the first thing you notice when you're sent there. And it's the thing you think about all the time you're on it. And it's the thing you remember when you're not there anymore. It's cold on the wall. You look for metaphors. It's cold as slate, as diamond, as the moon. Cold as charity. That's a good one. But you soon realize that the thing about the cold is that it isn't a metaphor. It isn't like anything else. It's nothing but a physical fact. This kind of cold, anyway. Cold is cold is cold.
Okay, you have set us up in this dystopian, kind of scary world. Tell me about this wall in your story. Where is it and why was it built?
The novel set in the world after catastrophic climate change, by which I mean something in the range of 4 degrees Celsius, 8 to 9 degrees Fahrenheit. You can go online and look up maps of that, and it's a terrifying place. It's a world where human reality is, you know, almost unimaginably altered. Large parts of the planet that we currently live on are uninhabitable. And that's the premise of the book. The world's had this catastrophic climate change, and it's set in an island in the North Atlantic. You may well think it has lots in common with present-day Britain. And this island has a wall all the way around its coast, 6,000 miles, 10,000 kilometers of coast, with a 15-foot-high concrete wall that's there for two reasons. It's to keep the higher sea levels out, and it's to keep outsiders out. It's to keep people from fleeing, the millions of people who are desperately fleeing the now uninhabitable parts of the earth. And it's to stop them getting over the wall into this, you know, in relative terms, safer place. And every citizen of this country has to spend 2 years standing guard on the wall to keep the people they call the others, which is basically everyone else in the world, to keep the others out. It's a 2-year obligatory form of national service. And as the book starts, the protagonist and narrator, Joseph Kavanagh, is beginning day one of his 2-year tour on the wall.
It's a pretty miserable job to have to stand on the wall for 2 years.
It is. You know, the daily reality is quite oppressive and nothing much happens, and you spend 12 hours at a time that just standing guard there. And at the same time, if anything does happen, you're in immediate mortal peril. So it's very like, the way I imagined it was very like people report military services. It's this mixture of, you know, long stretches of nothing much happening with occasional terrifying bursts of life-threatening action.
So who's trying to get over the wall? I mean, obviously people who are fleeing their native countries, but they're just desperately looking for some piece of safety?
Yeah, mainly because large parts of our planet don't really sustain human life anymore. You know, we don't fully understand it, but New York, Madrid and Beijing are all on the same latitude, and those latitudes are the ones that will no longer be able to sustain people in a significantly warmer world. So,
let me just pause for a moment there. You're saying that all of New York, or just downtown New York, is basically going to become uninhabitable without some serious major wall?
No. I'm talking about catastrophic climate change, several degrees centigrade of climate change, because there's a bunch of factors. It's rising sea levels, increased levels of drought, increased levels of flooding. But the really big one is massive crop failures, that you have effectively things not being able to grow in what are, by current standards, Saharan temperatures.
One of the points you're making is that climate change is connected to a lot of other issues. There will be climate refugees, people forced to leave their native countries because of droughts, because of political conflicts caused by environmental destruction. It's part of all the debates over immigration, over borders. This is not just about rising sea levels or rising temperatures.
No, it's not. It's about the way that feeds through into all sorts of complicated and interconnected other realities, some of which we don't really yet know about. It's an effort of the imagination to try and unpick or unravel the consequences, because, you know, let's face it, this is a world we're not living through, and we don't really fully understand what that would be like.
I heard that the original idea for the story came to you in a recurring dream. Is that true?
It is, yeah. I was writing another novel, different novel, and I started having this, it's like an image in a dream, recurring thing about somebody standing guard on the wall in the dark, in the cold, on their own at night with the water on the other side. And that was the germ of the book for me. And, you know, sometimes in between, when you're falling asleep, you can sort of will yourself back into the same place in a story. I kept going back to it and I was wondering, well, who is that? What's happening? And then I realized that actually the real question was, what's the world he's living in? And realized, oh, actually, that's an image about climate change. And I was then thinking about, well, okay, well, what's happened to the world? What's gone on? What's it like living in that altered world? And really answering that question, in a sense, unraveled or unpacked itself into the book. It was this sort of image that turned into a person, that turned into a world, and then into a story that sort of leads him and leads the reader through the world. It's a very unusual process for me. I've never written anything else like that.
Now, one of the subjects that you tackle in your book is how angry young people are at their parents' generation, basically, who did nothing to prevent climate change. I mean, they just stood by, watched it happen. And you have a passage where you get at this. Could you read that?
Absolutely. This is when Joseph Kavanagh, my narrator and protagonist, they do two-week tours of duty in the book, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, which incidentally I borrowed from a veteran of the First World War. I heard talk about what it was like being in the trenches. So they have 2 weeks off, and this is the end of his first 2 weeks off, and he's gone back to visit his parents. None of us can talk to our parents. By us, I mean my generation, people born after the change. You know that thing where you break up with someone and you say, it's not you, it's me? This is the opposite. It's not us, it's them. Everyone knows what the problem is. The diagnosis isn't hard. The diagnosis isn't even controversial. It's guilt, mass guilt, generational guilt. The olds feel they irretrievably screwed up the world, then allowed us to be born into it. You know what? It's true. That's exactly what they did. They know it. We know it. Everybody knows it. To make things worse, the olds didn't do time on the wall because there was no wall, because there'd been no change, so the wall wasn't needed. This means that the single most important and formative experience in the lives of my generation, the big thing we all have in common, is something about which they have exactly no clue. The life advice, the knowing better, the back-in-our-day wisdom, which, according to books and films, was a big part of the whole deal between parents and children, just doesn't work. Want to put me straight about what I'm doing wrong in my life, Grandad? No thanks.
You know, it's so sobering for me to read that passage, because I fit squarely in that generation of the olds, as I'm guessing you do. I think we're around the same age. So I have to ask, I mean, do you feel any personal responsibility for global warming?
I feel if we don't act, I think from where we are now, I think we're at a tipping point, really, because I think all reasonable people can regard the science as settled. The lesson from the science is pretty clear. It's that it's not too late. It's that we can act now. Kavanagh chooses to very, very directly and personally blame his parents. And I think that is perfectly likely to be a thing that happens, especially in some of the accelerated versions of climate change in which it happens within a couple of generations or one generation. I think that could well happen. But I wanted the reader to feel that there's, you know, it's more complicated than that. And everything Kavanagh says is true, in that he's telling the truth about his perspective, his feelings, how he sees the world. It's not quite the same thing as being fair. And I did want to leave the reader with a sense of, okay, fair enough, that's how you see it. But his poor old parents sitting there in the suburbs on their sofa watching the TV, I mean, are they really responsible for everything about the state of the world?
You know, my sense is that up until very recently, maybe even just the last few years, novelists have pretty much stayed away from writing about climate change. I mean, yes, there are always the apocalyptic stories, especially kind of in the sci-fi genre. But mostly, I think it just felt too big, or maybe kind of boring to write about. And it's, as you say, it's overwhelming if you actually sort of stare climate change in the face. Did this pose any particular challenges to you? And I mean, it's worth pointing out also that you write a lot of nonfiction. I'm interested in your choice of pursuing this in a novel.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. The thing about too big, too overwhelming, too. There's a thing, La Rochefoucauld, the French aphorist, said that death, like the sun, cannot be contemplated directly. You can't look straight at it. And I think climate change is like that too. It can leave you feeling despair. It can leave you feeling there's nothing to be done. And I was trying to figure out, you know, why this dream came, and why dream turned into a book. And actually, in a funny way, I think it's exactly because it's too difficult to think about. It sort of forced its way through my unconscious instead.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to end with one last reading, and I'm actually thinking the very last paragraph in the book. Could you read that for us?
Absolutely. "Tell me a story," said Hefa. I tried to think of one. "Everything's going to be all right," I said. "That's what a story is. Something where everything turns out all right." But I said that, and I could see it wasn't what she wanted to hear. That's another thing a story is, something somebody wants to hear. But my mind was blank, and all I could think was, she wants me to tell her a story where something turns out all right.
That's what a story is, something that turns out all right.
I said this to myself over and over again.
That's what a story is, a story is.
That's what a story is, something that turns out all right.
That's what a story is, a story is.
And then it came to me. And what I said out loud began like this. "It's cold on the wall."
Great ending.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Steve.
That was John Lanchester, author of The Wall.